Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into another edition of the Pro Lacrosse Faceoff presented by Laxdirt.com, the Laxworm Experience, MLL Radio, among others. I'm James Boger, hosting with Joe Keegan and Tom Bobe, and today we're going to do a basic back-to-college show. We are going to really go over what's been going on in the NCAA lacrosse rankings and every game that's been going on these past 2 weeks, while touching a little bit of the NLL to begin the show. And to begin with, once again, I want to introduce Tom and Joe and just kind of get into the NLL real quick. So I know all of us have been kind of focused on the NCAA tournament, or the NCAA lacrosse basic tournament at this point in time. But I kind of want to get into a couple NLL issues, general issues, because I think it's important that we kind of touch on all this. The NLL right now basically is a league of 500 teams, whenever you kind of count out Toronto. At some point in time, this league has got to kind of sort itself out. I know, Tom, you've been watching a couple of these games being a Swarm fan, and I kind of want to get your opinion on exactly where this league's going. And do you think there's another team that may be waiting in the wings to separate themselves? Besides Toronto, do you think there's another team that can possibly make a name for themselves moving forward in the season?
It's the same as every other year. We always see maybe one really good team. We saw it last year. We saw them kind of take the stand, and it was Edmonton last season, you know, basically running the table, and everybody else kind of hangs in there. Rarely do we see a team out of the playoffs early. Obviously, Calgary's having a struggle to the season. New England has lost 5 in a row. But everybody's still in it. And that's kind of the theme of NLL is every year everybody hangs around until the end and we see somebody make a run with 2 games left in the regular season and they storm their way through the playoffs. It's just the way NLL seems to come out every single season. And I think it's going to hold true this year. I think Toronto is the runaway, but at the same time, a playoff loss and it's over. And, you know, sorry, but the Rock haven't exactly been tremendous in the playoffs the last few seasons. So this is something that they're going to have to watch. And, you know, everybody talks in sports about peaking too early. You don't want to peak too early. And, you know, Toronto's riding high, but all it takes is one loss.
Well, one team that's kind of interesting heading forward in this NLL season is Rochester, because we all know what this team can do. We all know the experience that this team has. Tom, they're 6-3 right now. Do you think that Rochester right now is the team to beat, besides maybe a Toronto? You mentioned them being peaking maybe a little too early. Do you think Rochester is a team that can make the most amount of waves heading forward into the second half of the season, or do you think that there's another team on the horizon that could possibly do some damage in this league?
There's still the team nobody wants to play. When it comes to playoffs, you don't want to see Rochester on your schedule. They've won a couple of close games lately. They beat Buffalo 13-12, then they beat Calgary 12-11, and that's what they're going to need to do. They're going to need to win gritty, close, tough games. You know, they're building up their confidence and getting to that point. I mean, they've won 4 of their last 5. So they're in the process of getting things going, getting it together. Their last win was that goofy, kind of scrappy battle, or their last loss, I'm sorry, was that scrappy battle in Minnesota where they lost in overtime on not a wild goal, but a pretty amazing outside shot. So this team is the team that nobody wants to face. You've got a couple of MVPs, you've got a couple of MVP candidates, and I don't think anybody would look at their schedule and say, let's get Rochester, let's get them early in the playoffs so we can knock them off before the championship, because it just doesn't happen.
Last but not least, Tom, I want to ask you one last question about the whole NLL season, because there's been a lot of rumors and there's been a lot of reports – coming out that a couple players in the NLL circuit are not going to sign MLL deals. And I know we've been over this 1,000 times, and we have discussed, you know, how the two leagues need to work with each other and need to foster the game and everything else like that. And I think there's been a couple instances now where there are a couple players who now are kind of having to draw their line. And I'm not going to mention any names, I'm not going to mention any sources that we have, but we've heard about a couple of players possibly not signing outdoor deals to continue to play in the NLL. And what I want to ask you is, like, exactly where do you think this is going? Because I think this is kind of a bigger deal that's kind of going under the radar right now with, you know, NLL in full swing. And so do you think that some of these guys not signing outdoor deals for their team, like, how big of a deal do you think this is going to be for lacrosse heading in the future as far as the professional circuit's concerned?
As far as the professional circuit's concerned, it really is a simple breakdown. The NLL pays significantly more. That's just fact. The paycheck for an NLL game is more than double that of an MLL game. That's what these players are seeing. So if you're not signed by Warrior, by Brine, by STX, one of the outdoor companies, it's better for you to play NLL. I mean, I've talked to MLL outdoor all-stars, guys who you just expect to be there week in and week out, season in and season out, at the all-star game. And they'll flat tell you that if they could make an NLL team, they wouldn't have a choice but to do it, because if you want to make a living playing lacrosse, your odds are significantly better on the other side. What is it going to be? It's going to be the point where people can't play back and forth. It's going to get to the point where guys are missing half the season in the MLL to play NLL. The league doesn't want that. We saw it in the draft this year that the NLL guys are being undervalued because of their commitment. And it's absolutely true. What good is a guy who's your best player for 7 games when you need him for 14? It doesn't work out. It's slowly getting worse. The leagues are getting worse at communicating, worse at dealing with each other. More spite is being thrown back and forth, and it's just getting to the point that they won't coexist because it'll be two separate things. I'm not looking forward to that because I love the NLL guys that play in the MLL. I love the MLL guys that play in the NLL. But really, what other sport allows you to do both? What other sport is two sports? They're not. Lacrosse, my biggest thing about lacrosse and why it's not in the Olympics, why it's not a featured sport, is because it is two sports. If you ask a Canadian what lacrosse is, they think field or box lacrosse. If you ask an American, it's field. And there's a separation there. There's a separation of fans. You even have swarm fans in Minnesota that don't know what one or the other is. So it's tough. It's something that is getting worse, and it's going to be the undoing of the players and not the leagues. The leagues will survive, and they'll have their players. It'll be the players that suffer because they won't be able to play both. They won't be able to be featured in both. They'll have to make a choice.
It's going to be interesting. And that's one thing that I think that we're going to touch on at some point in time later on, because it's a real philosophical issue, indoor versus outdoor, and how the two leagues don't really coalesce with each other. And I think it's one of those things that moving forward is going to be a big issue with this league, or both leagues. And I think it's going to be a big issue with how people really value prospects. We saw it in the draft. You saw a lot of the Canadians fall because a lot of MLL teams don't want to adhere themselves to a lot of players who can't be there moving forward. And speaking of the NCAA, that is where we want to go this entire time. The NCAA this year has been really interesting because so far this year you've seen a lot of really interesting games. I mean, we're probably through, I mean, most teams have played about 3 to 5 games, and it's been really interesting to see exactly which teams are going to be really good heading forward. I mean, you see teams like Syracuse and North Carolina and Notre Dame be undefeated, but you'll see a lot of upstarts. You see a team like Marquette. You see a team like Colgate be undefeated. And you also see a real perennial powerhouse like Johns Hopkins be under the 500 mark moving forward this year. So I want to bring in Joe Keegan and kind of talk about the NCAA landscape at this point in time. And first off, Joe, what I want to do is I want to ask you, what team has really surprised you moving forward? Because we talked about last week, we had a couple ideas as far as teams that could really make, really do a little bit of damage. And as of this point in the season, what's one team that's really surprised you with how well they've played so far this year?
Yeah, the one that I'll go with right now is North Carolina. I mean, the win over Denver, that I guess answers your question. That surprised me. I was expecting a close game, but where UNC is at right now without Shane Simpson and Steve Contrello at the midfield, they sort of struggled to get 6-on-6 goals, and they really scrapped their way to a victory. They got Denver. They had, I think, let me check. I have it here. Most of their goals, of their 12 goals, 9 were either man up or fast break. And then, I mean, 3 goals in the 6-on-6, and one of them was sort of like just a fluky shot by Peyton Kolinsky that got blocked, and the ground ball falls right in front of him, and he picks it up and scores. So it was just – it was an all-around – out hustling, and I mean, from Jake Bailey beating guys to the end line to back up shots, and just outsmarting at the end of the game when they needed to run out the clock. They sent a guy over midfield. Denver didn't match feet. Jake Bailey gets a goal with a minute left to sort of, I guess, ice it. To me, that was the most impressive team so far this week, even though obviously expectations were high for UNC.
Tom, while North Carolina did notch probably the most high-profile win over the course of the weekend, what team made the most of an impact with you? Because I know there were a lot of other teams that really had pretty resounding wins, and especially in these conditions in the early season where there's snow on the ground, there's a lot of unknown factors. Who really made an impact to you this week?
Aside from Marquette, who is kind of the Cinderella story for everybody this season, and they've been terrific, I'm going to go with Princeton. Princeton won an ugly, snowy, nasty game at Hofstra that was incredibly fun to watch. I think they were better than the margin of victory in that game. They only won 14-12, but they played well. And they've got some absolute studs on this team. They followed that up by beating Hopkins. They jumped out to a huge lead and absolutely dominated the entire first quarter of that game. I mean, Hopkins, the first quarter time of possession, I don't have the stat, but it was ridiculous. Princeton absolutely owned them early. Then they let off a little bit and allowed Hopkins to make some plays, and they changed a few things up on them, and they didn't get it right, and then they ended up winning the game in overtime. But they just have, you know, senior leadership from Kip Orban, who's been tremendous so far this season. And, you know, the big man, Mike McDonald, down low, he just looks so confident. And, I mean, he doesn't miss. When he gets a shot, it's generally up in close, up in tight, and he just finishes it. They've been tremendous. I think their schedule is favorable the rest of the season because, in all honesty, aside from Yale, the Ivy League hasn't really impressed me all that much so far this season. I think Harvard has a good team, but we haven't seen enough of them yet to tell me they're going to be a top 10 team like they're ranked. And excuse me. And Cornell, they got a couple of studs, but they don't appear to be as deep as I think they are. I think this Princeton team is dangerous. I think they're poised to make a run, and Chris Bates has them playing tremendously.
Now, while there are rankings out right now, I mean, you see, if you look up NCAA lacrosse and you look up the rankings from inside lacrosse, they're up. And however, I think they're a little bit dangerous moving forward because you do have some teams that may have struggled a little bit more than necessary in their early season games, ranked a little too high and vice versa. Joe, I kind of want to get your impact on these rankings. I kind of want to know what you think about how teams are ranked right now and whether or not, like, who are the contenders and who are the pretenders. So I kind of want to just get your input on exactly which teams are going to be real forces moving forward and which ones might not exactly be in the place where they might be a couple weeks later on, because it is still early. So what do you make of these early season rankings?
Well, for sure, like you said, the rankings are just it's not something that I'm envious of voting for these polls, because it's an impossible task. I mean, there were three teams receiving first place votes this week, and absolutely any of the three could be first place teams: Syracuse, UNC, or Notre Dame. We really don't know yet, so I have a tough time writing off anybody as a pretender right now, unless, I mean, I've seen a string of very bad games from them. But for the most part, we have a lot of teams in this top 20 and trying to squeeze into this top 20. Like, I mean, Colgate just got in, and we have Villanova who just got in. Michigan is on right now. They received a vote or two, and there are just a lot of teams that look like they have the potential not only to make the tournament, but to make a run in it.
Tom, there are 20 teams that are ranked. And it's interesting to see exactly where these teams have been ranked, because it's still super early in the season. You have a team like Albany, who is 1-1, ranked 12. And then you have a team, I mean, you got teams like Johns Hopkins, who are 17, they're 2-3. So how much stock do you put on these rankings early in the season, and exactly what do you make of everything?
None. I don't rankings this early in the season. I think it's unrealistic expectations. Teams aren't punished enough for losses. They're not given enough credit for wins, because when you beat a team that's not ranked, it doesn't really matter. But if that team all of a sudden becomes ranked, it gains more weight as the season goes on. It's too much too early, and I can't justify ranking anyone. To say, unless you want to say right now we have three number one teams, we have three number one contenders. Oh, okay, I can live with that. But, you know, we rank 25 teams out of 69. So being in the top 25 doesn't have the luster that it has in, say, NCAA football or NCAA basketball, where there's three times as many teams. So I don't really hold the rankings to be that big of a deal. And, you know, being in the top 20 isn't as big of a deal as it should be, especially when only 16 make the tournament. So maybe a top 16 at the end of the season is more important to me than a top 20, because being number 17 does you no good at all. Going forward, they all have tough schedules. North Carolina has the hardest schedule in the country. They play a five-game stretch at the end of the season. That's Maryland, Duke, at Virginia, Syracuse, at Notre Dame. I don't know how any team in the country can come through that unscathed. To pick somebody to run the table this year is impossible. So I think North Carolina is gonna take a loss at some point. I think Syracuse is going to take a loss at some point. Notre Dame's schedule is a little more favorable. They don't have the difficult out-of-conference schedule this season. So they have, I guess if I'm going to pick anybody, I'm going to say that they, despite being clearly my least favorite of these three teams, probably have the best shot at going undefeated, but you still have to get through the ACC tournament, and that's going to be tough. I mean, these teams are going to knock each other off like crazy, and I don't see how that's going to be possible. So, yeah, somebody's going to, as I said to Joe earlier, regress to the mean. They're going to come back to the field, come back to the pack, and there's so much talent on all these rosters that I don't see predicting a number one at this point in the season to have any value.
Now, you both mentioned the fact that these rankings are kind of subjective at this point in time. I mean, you have teams from really stacked conferences being obviously represented in these top 20 rankings. My question to both of you guys is contenders and pretenders, because I think that's kind of the thing that in the early season, we've seen these teams for between basically 3 and 5 games, and so we kind of know what they're going to be going forward, unless some other person steps up and really makes a huge impact. And Joe, I kind of want to go to you on this one first. Which one of these top 20 teams do you really think is a pretender? Which one of these top 20 teams that's ranked either highly in the rankings or highly in your mind who might not be an actual elite team moving forward? Who do you think is a pretender as far as these rankings are concerned?
Yeah, looking at this list, I mean, you have to go down a long ways to find somebody who I would call a pretender at this point. I mean, we're not even in conference play yet, so we really still have no idea how most of these teams stack up against each other. I think this week, this is going to be sort of like a week where we find out a lot of teams' true colors. I mean, we've seen great games. I mean, Denver, Duke, and UNC, Denver, Syracuse, Virginia, Loyola, Virginia. We've seen great teams play against each other, but I mean, we haven't seen great teams play against each other enough. There aren't too many teams. I guess maybe Hopkins would be the one team that has played multiple highly ranked opponents. So, I mean, this weekend I'm looking forward to a lot of games like Loyola Duke, I think, is going to tell us a lot, and Notre Dame Denver, because we haven't seen much of Notre Dame this year. They've played a fairly easy schedule, and this is going to be sort of their first test for them. And am I going to write them off if they lose to Denver? No, but I'm interested to see where they gauge, where they stack up against Denver, and if Denver can bounce back after the UNC game. So, I mean, the season's a few months long. There's still snow on the ground. There's plenty of time for all of these teams to develop into the teams that they're going to be in May. I really don't think we're at any point to write anyone off right now. I think all these teams have a lot of growing to do, and they have a lot. They have to figure themselves out, and we'll see who can take some of the punches, you know, in the non-conference play and put together a strong conference performance, win a tournament, get an AQ, because for most of these teams, that's what it's going to take to make that field of now 18. And it's going to be a long road. So I wouldn't count out anyone right now.
It is early in the season, but I think there are a couple teams that could possibly be labeled as almost like pretenders, not contenders. Tom, who is a team that you see in the top 20 teams who might not deserve to be there? I mean, you have a team like Marquette, who is 5-0. They might not deserve to be there. I mean, they haven't really played a whole lot of teams. When you look at Johns Hopkins, they're 2-3, but they've played actual teams. Not to say that anyone who Marquette's played is not an actual team, but Johns Hopkins has played teams where they get challenged week in, week out. They have a really good schedule. And I kind of just want to know your opinion on a team that might be in the top 10, the top 5, who might be a team that you don't really have enough faith in to move forward as the season moves forward.
Colgate. Joe didn't want to name anybody. I'm going out there. They haven't beaten anybody that impresses me yet. They beat Bryant, which at the beginning of the season looked like a huge upset. It's turning out to not really be. They squeezed by Vermont in a game that was another weather-affected game that probably they played better than the two-goal win. They beat Lafayette, which I can't give them too much credit for, and they beat Bucknell, who I've covered every game this season except for today's game, and they just – I'm not terribly impressed. I think Ryan Walsh is the guy, and after him there's a fairly large drop-off to the next guy. So – until they beat somebody, I can't rank them just yet. I think 4-0 is a big deal, but they don't play anybody who I would consider to be a top quality team until the middle of March when they face Cornell. I mean, they could easily be 7-0 going into that game and have no quality wins. Are we seeing a UMass from 2012 where, you know, they made a huge run, went undefeated into the tournament, and then lost in the first round because they didn't really play anybody? It's possible, but I'm not saying they're bad. I haven't seen them beat anybody that jumps out at me as being a big quality win yet. in order to rank them and move them so far up in the rankings. Albany's another one. Lyle Thompson has not been himself yet this season. He was knocked out of one game and held to below his last year's season average in the other. He's still a phenomenal player, but they've lost the other two. And that was a three-man show. That was a three-man rotation, three-man setup, and they relied on that. That was a huge part of their offense last year, and they're missing it at this point. And to have them lose the way they did to Cornell, that was a bad loss. I mean, every loss is bad, but that they looked borderline uncompetitive in that game against a ranked opponent. And, you know, they face UMass this week, a team that hasn't been good yet this season. And I just think they're probably going to be one of those teams that wins the games that they're supposed to, probably gets into the tournament because they can win their conference. But Syracuse, Yale, Harvard, the good teams on their schedule are probably going to beat them and probably beat them fairly easily.
Now, one thing that Joe did mention is the fact that there are a lot of great games this weekend. And I kind of want to use this time as previewing a lot of these games because, I mean, as many people are going to turn in to the Mount St. Mary's Furman game, which obviously is near and dear to my heart as a Furman alumni, there are a lot of other great games. I mean, you see Notre Dame versus Denver. You got UMass versus Albany. You've got Princeton, Maryland, Loyola versus Duke. You got a lot of great matchups. And, Joe, I kind of want to get your take on exactly what this NCAA weekend is going to be like because I feel like there are a lot of great games. So if you're going to highlight a couple games, how should people tune in? Because nowadays, ESPN3 has been a huge thing as far as the NCAA lacrosse community is concerned. So you can actually tune in a lot of these games. And so what should people be tuning into this weekend?
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to find links to tune in, I would go to College Cross's page. They post every day a sort of overview with a link to the live stats and a link to the live stream, if there is a live stream. And from there, some of the games you'll have to pay for. I think the NEC and the Patriot League are and the Southern Conference all show free games, and then you can get like bundled packages like College Sports Live. I think that's $10 or $15 a month, and it shows almost every home game for like most Big East teams, Ohio State, Virginia. It shows a good amount of games. So there's definitely no shortage of ways to watch games. You just kind of have to go digging for them. So to answer your question, the two games that I really want to see this week are Loyola Duke and Notre Dame Denver. I know Tom was going back and forth on Twitter earlier saying that there's no way Loyola and Hopkins get in the tournament, and I just think that's one of the most ridiculous things you could say because, I don't know how you count out teams. Tom's talking about Princeton 1 second, and now here's Hopkins, who lost in overtime to Princeton, but they can't get into the tournament, and Loyola gets into the tournament. I just think that's ridiculous. I think the Big Ten is as wide open as any conference. Hopkins can easily win an AQ. Then I think Loyola in the Patriot League could win their conference. I don't think they're as likely to as Hopkins. I think their Patriot League is just a little tougher with Army and Lehigh and Colgate, but I think Loyola could even get in at large if they make a run here. I mean, that's what makes this Duke game so big, and I think we haven't really seen Duke play someone this good since the Denver game, which was perhaps not as close as the score indicated. It was 17-13 the fourth quarter, entire second half, Trevor Baptiste dominated. He went 17 for 19 in the second half and sort of took over the game at the faceoff X for Denver. But Duke definitely can compete with top teams they lost to Denver and don't really have another great win on their resume, I think Loyola would be a very good one. Maybe not a great one, but a very good one, because I think Loyola is a pretty complete team. Defensively, they're starting to figure themselves out, life after Joe Fletcher. And offensively, they have firepower everywhere. I mean, Pontrello has been relatively quiet all year, leaving the scoring up to the lefty Canadian, Zach Herwire, and midfielder Romar Dennis. The kid alley dodges to both hands, shoots on the run, and the offense is complete, and the defense is getting there. And I'm looking forward to seeing Loyola play Duke, see who comes out on top of that, count out the loser, but I think we'll know a little bit more about each team after that.
Tom, I kind of want to get your impact on exactly what's going to happen this weekend and the games you're looking forward to watching. There are a lot of great marquee matchups. Which one makes it to where you're going to tune in?
Denver-Notre Dame is intriguing because Denver's coming off that loss. I'm interested to see what Notre Dame is able to do. You've got a juggernaut offense against a team that's historically known for their defense, yet is playing amazing offense yet this season. I think that's a test. That's probably Notre Dame's first real test. And I just think that's going to be a game that is must watch lacrosse. You know, the fact that it's two top five teams, that doesn't really matter. I agree. Loyola Duke is going to be interesting. Loyola has not met expectations yet this season, and Duke is tough. They're a tough team. They've got a ton. They have some issues. I think they need to work out at attack, but they're getting there. They're not a complete team, and that's a John Donowski team. He does not want them to be complete in March. He wants them to be complete in May, and I think he's getting that. Hopkins Navy. Navy's a tough team. They play that different style, and they've been tremendous. I mean, there's a number of games. Maryland Princeton. Neither, you know, I talked in length about Princeton. I like them. Maryland looked great against Drexel, but are they a dominant team? We're going to find out. We're going to find out a little more about them again this week. You know, Virginia Cornell, again, neither team has tremendously impressed me with what they've done so far this season. I think that's going to be something to watch. You're going to see them both get tested against teams that are very highly ranked. So I'm looking forward to that one. There's any number of games that are almost much watched. This is a huge Saturday. We're going to start to see the cream rise at this point in the season. And, you know, Joe doesn't like to commit to anything. He doesn't like to talk bad about anybody. But this is the way it works. You know, some of these teams just aren't going to make it. Sorry, Hopkins has not done enough to impress me at this point in the season to call them a tournament team. I don't think they can win the Big Ten. I don't think they're going to get an at-large bid. So, yeah, I have no problem saying I don't think they can make the tournament. And the way Loyola has played, they need to do more down the stretch. I'm not saying they're not capable of it. And, in essence, I'd rather take a shot and be wrong than not take the shot. So to say one of those two teams isn't going to make it, yeah, I'm confident in that statement. Absolutely, because they just haven't done enough yet this season, haven't seen enough, haven't showed enough to prove to me that either one of them belongs in the tournament.
Well, one thing I kind of wanted to do for both you guys is to look at risers and fallers in the NCAA rankings. Because we're still super early in everything, and there's no reason to make super grandiose statements about these teams, because the NCAA tournament is way off in the distance. So, Tom, I kind of wanted to throw it to you right now and just look at a team that you don't think is worth their rank. And it could be a top five team, could be a top 20 team, could be whatever. But exactly what team do you think is a little bit vulnerable? And I'm going to go and throw it to you.
God, I get so much crap for being a Syracuse homer, but that's who I'm taking. The defense has not been tremendous. I still see holes in the defense. I see too much ball watching at times. I think they played their best game against Virginia, but I think Army showed people what to do and how to get them moving defensively and get them out of position. Sean Young, who's a tremendous defender, he was an MLL draft pick. I think he's been a weak link at times this season. He's watched the ball. He's been out of position. He really has trouble when his defender is the far man away from the ball with, you sink in, you suck down, because when your man is opposite end of the field, you don't have to play tight. But he gets out of position when that happens, and his defender is, or his offensive player is able to get away from him at times. And it's led to several goals. So Syracuse's offense is tremendous. I think they're incredibly deep. I don't think they've really been tested hard. I think they've done so well at the faceoff X. They've had so many things going right. I wonder what happens to this team when they really get tested by somebody and they really have to fight for it at the end. That ACC is an incredibly tough division. Any one of those teams could win the ACC tournament. Any one of those teams could win the national title this season. So to have them ranked number one when UNC has had probably more quality wins up till this point, they jump Notre Dame in the rankings. I struggle with that. I just don't see it trying to be in that position.
Joe, there are a couple teams that have outplayed themselves. You look at Marquette, you look at a couple of real good teams that played themselves in the top 20. Who's a team that you think is playing above their schedule? Who's a team that is making a mark that could possibly make it to where it's going to be a future success story instead of just right now playing against, I don't want to say lesser opponents, I don't want to say anything bad about the people they're playing, but they're not playing Johns Hopkins' schedule. What's a team that's maybe an upstart that you think is going to be an actual player moving forward?
And they've not the best quality wins, but they've looked pretty good during their wins. They beat up Penn State pretty well, who is in the Big Ten, which, again, I think is just it's sort of a mess to predict right now. I would say it's Maryland and Hopkins at the top. I have no idea who's going to come out on top on that. If you put a gun to my head right now, I would pick Hopkins, but who knows? So Penn State could emerge as a player in that. Penn State's had a few good games now. They beat Penn. They had a great game against Virginia. So I'd chalk that up as a quality win for Villanova. And then they went on the road, beat a CAA team, and that conference has been struggling. But they get the win against Drexel and beat another team in that conference, Delaware. So they have a few wins under their belt. They crept into the top 20. It's going to be interesting to see what they do the rest of the way. They have a very young team overall, young on attack at the face-off X and in the net. And they're just a team that we still don't know that much about. They play a very tough out-of-league schedule before they get into the Big East, which is not much easier. They get Lehigh, Penn, and Maryland coming up right before they jump into Marquette and Denver and that Big East schedule. So we'll see what they can do. I think Villanova might not be necessarily a threat to be there on Memorial Day, but they're a team that could definitely make it into the tournament and win a game or two.
One thing that I think is very interesting as far as the NCAA tournament schedule is concerned is players making a name for themselves who might not have been drafted in the MLL or NLL spectrum. And I think there are a lot of players who have been doing their time, making their time and making a name for themselves. And so there are a lot of undrafted players who obviously make themselves into roles in a professional lacrosse league that could possibly move themselves forward. So I kind of want to get you guys' opinion about exactly which players have made themselves into real viable candidates to be picked up by MLL rosters, because we are doing a professional lacrosse show. And so I kind of want to get you guys' opinion on a lot of undrafted guys. And Joe, I'm going to throw it to you first. Which guys so far in the 5-6 games have made names for themselves as far as being viable candidates to making themselves eligible for the MLL and NLL, and who do you think is really making a name for themselves?
Hey, yeah, the obvious undrafted player who's been playing very well is Syracuse midfielder Nicky Golasso. He was the leading scorer as a freshman at UNC. I know Tom's definitely going to say him. He's going to be obsessed with him, say some team should pick him up and play him. But I'm sure he'll get time at Major League Lacrosse level. He's definitely a kind of guy who now, as a converted midfielder from attack, can sort of beat you in a few different ways. He can dodge from the low wings. He can invert at X. And he can shoot now. So he's a pretty complete offensive player. He's drawn a shorty every week so far. Most teams pulled Schoonmaker, and then last week UVA pulled Lecky. So it'll be interesting to see what St. John's does this weekend in terms of Golasso. And we'll see how his production is if he draws the pull. And, if you take him out of that Syracuse offense at the next level, the kid can still play. But it's everything right now is gelling for Syracuse. All the parts fit, so I think you have to take into account that all these guys might not necessarily come out from the collegiate game to MLL from May to June and just start clicking like they are right now, because chemistry should not go unnoted for that team. So my guy who's been undrafted, who I like a lot, is Villanova. Again, I'm going with Villanova. Short stick D Mitty, Remington Pope. Kids out of Boston, went to Governor's Academy, 6'1", 190. Big D Mitty. I believe he played long stick Mitty in high school and has converted to short stick. He's good footwork. Teams have tried to invert him. Penn State loves to invert with their midfielders, and he just wasn't having any of it. He met him step for step, bounced him out, and just a strong kid, top of the box and behind the cage. So it's a depth thing, and it's sort of a position for need for the Cannons, position of need for the Cannons, and he's a local kid. So I see him earning a spot on the practice squad at least to start, and then who knows, working his way up that roster in Boston.
One really interesting thing about this year in lacrosse is the exposure. And so now you get to actually watch college lacrosse. Every week, week in, week out, you get to tune in through a variety of channels. Tom, I kind of want to throw this back to you and say who is your most interesting non-drafted player, because we've been able to see a lot more lacrosse this year. We've been able to see a lot more talent show themselves moving forward who the majority of mainstream lacrosse fans weren't able to see in these past couple of years. Who's really stuck out to you?
Jordan Greenfield. He's a senior at Marquette, attackman. He did not play last year after playing in 2013 at Fairfield. Just a tremendous on and off ball player. He's having a ridiculous season. He's a big part of that emergence for the Marquette program. He seems to do it all on the field. And I don't know, against Richmond, he lit him up for 6 goals, but a lot of those goals came in different situations. He can attack from behind. He can attack from the wing. He's got the ability to create and finish on the crease. I just think overall, he's one of those players that maybe everybody forgot about because he took a year off and you don't know what's going on. But, I mean, he scored 34 goals in 2013 for Fairfield, was their leading player or leading scorer on a team that had Sam Snow, the midfielder, as as another player. And Snow has, I mean, he hasn't had a lot of success in the MLL, but he's consistently been on or a part of a roster. So he's just a player that I think kind of came out of nowhere. He's got 15 goals and 8 assists so far this season, scoring almost 5 points a game. Marquette has been a surprise, and he's been a riser right along with them. He's just one of those players whose stock has been going up and up and up, and the better they do, the more he's going to be noticed. And, you know, maybe he's the player that nobody has heard of that is all of a sudden going to be a name by the end of the season.
We've seen a lot of these MLL guys play now. We've seen a lot of the guys who have been drafted play a couple games at least. And so now we get to kind of plug them into whatever system they're going into, hopefully in the pros. And so, Tom, I want to throw this right back to you. Who's the guy who's most interesting to you as far as someone who has been drafted, who has played the way they played, and who kind of fits into a system? Who is the most interesting, I guess, the most interesting MLL prospect, but you can't really call them a prospect because they've already been drafted. So who is the most MLL drafty that you're looking forward to based off the system they're going into?
Probably Joey Sankey. I criticized Charlotte very hard for that pick. I thought that was a little early, thought that was a reach, but the way he's played this season, the way he's scrappy, and the ability off the ground in transition as hard as he plays, that's probably what stands out the most to me. Is he's just one of those players that is always in the picture when a play is being made. He might not be the guy who finishes. He might not be getting the assist. He's just there making the right play at the right time. And I think him and Bitter have made each other quite a bit better, and I think they push each other and challenge each other every day. I'm really interested to see him line up with a Justin Ward and to see what he's capable of doing at the next level. Again, I'm tough on a lot of players. I criticize everybody with the hopes that it makes them better, with the hopes that it makes them succeed, or that they will exceed my expectations. Sankey has already gone above and beyond so far this season. He's already been a tremendous player, and I think at the next level he's going to be able to do the things he's done at UNC going against Tucker Durkin. I mean, he faced him as a freshman. So when this guy gets on an MLL field, I think he's very capable of being the leading scorer for the team that he goes on to, potentially as a rookie. And no one has an offensive need for a guy to step up and be the number one scorer like Charlotte.
Joe, we're a couple weeks after the draft, and there are a lot of players who have made a huge impact in the NCAA lacrosse scene. Who do you really think right now is a senior who's going to make an impact on the team that they're drafted on? Because we're always focused on the next level. And so who do you really think is going to be making an impact moving forward as far as these seniors are concerned?
Yeah, a guy I like playing a lot right now is Joe McCallion for Penn. He's the 52nd overall pick by Denver, and they did go for a lot of box guys before that in Westberg and Dan Taylor. So they don't really have many holes on their roster, just like most Major League Lacrosse teams. It's going to be tough for any of these guys to crack a roster, never mind a seventh-round pick. But if any seventh-round pick is going to do it, I like McCallion's chances. He can shoot the lights out. He had 4 man-up goals against Maryland last week, and he also plays defense. He has good build. He's a strong kid, and we know Denver loves to do that with Snyder and Pennington and even at times, sometimes, Jeremy Sieverts. They'll throw on the defensive ends, and most recently Jeremy Noble. I mean, they're constantly running an offensive midfielder on defense so that they can get the matchups that they want and play at a high tempo. So Joe McCallion is both playing well and fits into what the Outlaws do.
The next thing I wanted to kind of dive into, guys, and I know this is, by the way, everyone listening, this is a real, like, I'm just throwing this on everybody, but I think there's a lot of interesting training camp battles as far as lacrossing is concerned. I think there's a lot of things that can be determined based off what teams are going to go through in the next couple of weeks, whenever they actually get involved with what they're doing. The first one that I want to get into is just the Charlotte face-off situation. And that's my big face-off battle, because I think that the retirement of Timmy Fallon is going to present an opportunity for a lot of these guys to really make a name for themselves. And you're looking at Brandon Fowler, who went back to Duke for wrestling. And it's going to be really interesting to see exactly what this team's going to do with their face-off moving forward, because without the Jeff Snyder impact that they were made during their playoff run, like, there was really not a good face-off guy for Charlotte. And so it's just going to be interesting to see who can really establish themselves as far as being that type guy for a team that's always had that weakness moving forward. And so I kind of want to move forward for Tom and just say, like, which training camp battle is most interesting to you?
Maybe that's tough, because every team is incredibly deep at this point in the season. These rosters are loaded, stacked. I think Florida, you know, if you're going to go with Charlotte as a training camp battle, I think Florida is going to have a little bit of a training camp battle. I love Chris Mattis, but I don't know that they're sold on him, being that they're, you know, the guy that was their face-off guy the year before kind of took the year off. But if you're going to look at a battle, in my mind, it's going to be the Lizards attack. That team is loaded. They have everyone that they want, but if Crotty's going to play down low to make more room for Rabel, where's Gibson go? Where does Palisek go? Who gets to play where for that team? And in every offense position, because they're not six deep at offense. They're 12 deep on offense, and not everybody gets to get the ball on every possession. And that team, New York, is going to be a tough roster to crack. I got to give a shout-out. They just picked up my good buddy Will Harrington, so that's awesome. I'm pretty excited about that. I want to see him succeed at that team, even though I'm saying that's going to be the hardest roster in the league to make. But, you know, they brought in the Brattons, and do they have any spot at all in the league? I don't think so, but I'm not going to rule them out as being capable of making this team. So they're just so loaded. I think every position except for Depot on that roster is going to be a battle, not just for a roster spot in the daily 19-man or the weekly 19-man, but a spot in the lineup at all.
Jill, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but there are a lot of battles going on in training camps, and there are going to be a lot of positional battles that we're not really delving into right now. What seems to be on the bare surface, what is the most interesting battle that you're looking forward to heading into training camp as far as the MLO rosters are concerned?
It's tough, because most of these teams have plenty of guys who are going to be wearing adrenaline snapback caps on the sideline this summer who could plug in and play right away. But one of the things I thought that Tom said was interesting was that the Lizards have depth everywhere except for Depot. And that was actually one of the units that I was looking at. And when you initially asked the question, I was going to say it's one of the tougher teams to crack the lineup at. I mean, the Lizards last year had a strong defense with Brian Karalunas, who's now in Ohio, but Joe Fletcher, Steve Holmes, and Kyle Hartzell, and they draft Mike Pellegrino. They have Luke Dupree coming back from injury, and they traded for Brian Spallina, Coach Joe Spallina's brother. So they did lose Karalunas, but they did just bring in
three more guys who are more than capable of playing. And I think it's going to be interesting to see who gets sent down to close defense and who they let run free at LSM, because Pellegrino is definitely – that's his game at the college level. That is Hartzell's position right now, but we've seen Hartzell play some close defense in Major League Lacrosse. So who knows? It's going to be interesting to see what they do there. But, yeah, as for every other team, I mean, we just focus on the Lizards, but they're definitely not the only team with a tough roster to crack. I think most of these teams are overflowing with talent right now.
I think that's one thing that's going to move forward in the MLL scene, is the fact that a lot of these teams are going to be cutting enough players to where they are not going to they're going to have a roster that's almost overflowing with talent. And I think that's the biggest stipulation for this league moving forward, is to expand. And I think that's something that's going to be really kind of fun moving forward. But we are actually done for the night. We don't want to keep you guys for an extended period of time. And so we at Laxer just kind of want to thank you guys for listening. And next week, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, tune in, because we're going to go over the NCAA, all the games throughout the course this weekend. We're going to be on the Laxworm Experience, and we are going to make sure that we cover a lot more of the college scene and a lot more of the NCAA, because that is the big thing that's going on right now. We're going to make sure that we preview a couple teams and move forward as we probably should. And so thank you for listening. Tune in next week, like I said, 8 p.m., presented by Laxdirt and the Laxworm Experience, and we hope to see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.